by and large, consumers, they do want to purchase from companies that stand for something. They don't want to be associated or put things on their body or in their body that are going to be bad or have a bad reputation. So that's really starting to ramp up. This is different in every market around the world. It's different within markets around the world as to how much consumers are willing to purchase sustainable.
Welcome to The Green Away, the show about people, planet, and purpose, and how investors and corporate leaders push forward in a complex world. My name is Rosemary Petrus, senior journalist at FS Sustainability and host of The Green Away. Today, we have a sustainability veteran whose important book on greenwashing has just been launched in the UK, North America and Singapore. Welcome back, friend of the show, John Pabon.
Thanks for having me. This feels like my second home. I think this is the third time I've been on the podcast, so good to be back.
Tell us about your book and why you think it's been so well received.
So the book launched in Australia. We're recording this, what is it, the end of March. So the book launched in Australia, New Zealand last June. And it was sort of a trial run before we launched it in North America. Silly publishing, licensing stuff as well going in there. But it's been quite well received here. I've spoken on a few panels in the literary circuit, which has been great. But I think the reason it's been so well received and hopefully is as well received in these new markets where it just launched is because there's not really much on the bookshelves that talks about this. It's sort of, for those that aren't in the sustainability space, it's kind of a new topic, a new idea. People may know it's happening, but they may not have the words to describe what's happening. So it's nice to see that there is something new on the shelves for people to read. Of course, before you do any sort of writing, you do a little bit of market research. And what I found is that a lot of the stuff that is currently out there, it's either highly academic, so textbooks, or quite out of date. I mean, we've really seen the topic of greenwashing and companies doing greenwashing ramping up as we've come out the other end of the global pandemic. So we're in an entirely different world now than even just a few years ago. So having a little bit of a fresh take, not to pat myself on the back, I think is why it's been so well received.
Yeah. And as someone with a global perspective, what key differences have you seen between, for example, Australia and North America regarding greenwashing? Particularly interested in like the cultural attitudes, consumer awareness, and regulatory frameworks.
Absolutely. So for anybody listening, I'm originally from Los Angeles, but I do live in Melbourne. I've lived kind of all over the world. So New York, Shanghai, Seoul, and now here. I've not lived in a more left-leaning city in my entire life than Melbourne, obviously.
Oh, really?
And I live in the heart of that, in what your predecessor, Rachel, used to call the People's Republic of Northcote. So, you know, this is as left as it gets. And I think because of that, from a consumer perspective, consumers are very switched on here of things that are going on, of understanding how to read between the lines of labels, to not take things at face value, which is a big part of how at this stage of the game, people can identify greenwashing when it's happening. I've been out of the US now, gosh, almost 20 years, so I don't really have a full grasp of what consumers are like there, but just from my interactions with the businesses that I do work with over there, I'm not sure the market is as switched on as maybe it is here in Melbourne. When it comes to consumer understanding of these things happening to them, it's sort of more taken at face value. I think particularly with the rise of social media, particularly TikTok, people are now a little bit more across a lot of stuff that's happening, especially from the more corporate greed side of things. So hopefully that opens up eyes as well to alert them to when they're being lied to.
I wonder how the TikTok ban in the US will impact on that.
Let's see if it actually happens. But yeah, if it does, I mean, there's always a VPN. You can always get around it somehow if you really want to doom scroll.
As you're aware, Australia's new climate reporting laws, they're designed to mandate climate impact transparency for larger companies for the first time. The rules were originally slated to come into effect July 1st. But on Wednesday, Treasurer Jim Chalmers announced that large entities will now have until January 2025, and smaller businesses will follow in 2027 to 2028. Do you think these new laws are enough? And what do you think about that pushback of the timeline?
Australia is a very interesting place, and it does actually feature a bit in my book about how on the surface, we sort of assume Australia, because of its reputation, is clean, green, and a little bit ahead of most markets. But in reality, when you look behind the scenes, it's a little bit behind. So mm-hmm. when the original announcement came out, particularly around fines for greenwashing, and we saw a few of those happen last year, and the reporting mechanisms coming out, those were moves in the right direction. A little bit behind other developed markets, but at least that was the right thing to do. And Australia was kind of a pioneer when it came to fining companies for greenwashing. But to your question, seeing this pushback, and obviously there's been lobbying from the private sector to make that happen, you sort of wonder, okay, who's running the show here a little bit? And I think for any company that is mature when it comes to sustainability, which should be most large multinational companies, they're doing this stuff already. So mm-hmm. this isn't impacting them negatively. They're probably not the ones lobbying to have these dates pushed out. It's the ones that are particularly bad that do need to have mm-hmm. the monitoring, that do need to have more transparency, and we do need to be calling out for greenwashing. They're the ones probably working the hardest. And I think all of us listening to this can have some names in our head already of who and what companies those are. So those are the ones pushing back against progress. But overall, I think just because those dates get pushed out, that doesn't mean companies are going to see that and go, oh, we can be bad now. I think if you're doing good, you're going to continue to do good. If you're being bad, then you're going to continue to be bad until the government tells you to stop.
Now, investors need more transparency on climate reporting, but a lot of businesses seem to be concerned that perhaps they, you know, maybe didn't have enough time or enough resources to be able to put this information together. What would you say to businesses that perhaps, you know, innocently are struggling to navigate the challenge of maintaining genuine sustainability practices and ensuring they don't stray into greenwashing territory?
I think that's the critical thing, particularly for businesses and investors, to remember is that there are different types of greenwashing. There's the greenwashing that's built into the marketing mix, the real insidious stuff, which is probably a small portion. But the larger portion, especially with companies now, if they're late to the game, jumping on the sustainability bandwagon, they're trying to do a little bit too much, and maybe they're making mistakes along the way. Entirely innocent and accidental, we can fix that. So that's okay. So I think for anybody listening from the, you know, if you're sitting with your legal teams right now listening to this and you're afraid of making a mistake, it's okay. You're probably going to make mistakes, that's for sure. But that's what investors are there for, to kind of hold your hand in a lot of ways, because they need to protect their own assets as well. So I think it's really important for companies to be as transparent as possible and not worry. That's strong. Not worry about the repercussions. Of course, worry about the repercussions. Don't go out and lie. But there will be mistakes along the way, and that's okay. But you have to start somewhere. You can't just sit back in your boardrooms and have your legal and marketing teams tell you don't do anything, because that's not going to help you. The idea of being a sustainable business, of improving your operations and being transparent and avoiding greenwashing, this is not going away. So it's not like you can just put your head in the sand and pretend in 5 years you're not going to have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. You will have to face it eventually. So you might as well do it now.
Yeah. And now you've worked with the United Nations, McKinsey, Business School for Social Responsibility, and the US Green Chamber of Commerce. Given your experience advising multinational corporations, how do you see the role of international collaboration in addressing the issue of greenwashing and promoting sustainability?
Collaboration is such an important thing when it comes to sustainability. There's a reason why collaboration and partnership is one of the sustainable development goals. It's critical to get anything across. And what we found, particularly when I worked for BSR, the Business for Social Responsibility, who's kind of the McKinsey of the sustainability world, we really kind of pioneered this idea of cross-industry collaboration around particular issues, or even bringing within a particular industry, getting people around a table to talk to each other. Because by and large, when it comes to sustainability, the issues we face and the solutions we have, it's pretty industry agnostic, right? It doesn't matter if you're in construction or you're in oil or you're in fast-moving consumer goods. we have these solutions. So it's important to share these across so we can fast track and actually get to the more important meaty things that we're trying to solve. One of the groups I work with now is a think tank called the Conference Board, and I run their Asia Sustainability Leaders Council. And it's a group of, let's call them CSOs, I guess, for lack of a better title, that get around the table. And there are meaty issues that we discuss that somebody will always have a solution for. It doesn't matter what it is or what industry it is. Through that collaboration, through those partnerships, we're able to overcome issues that on the surface may look like they're impossible. But again, someone has the answer somewhere. So long answer to your short question, partnerships are the way to go. Don't be afraid of partnerships within your industry. You know, don't hold your cards close to your chest and be afraid of any company taking things away from you. It's okay. They're not going to. All the way through cross-industry and even public-private partnerships with government organizations or NGOs, those are also super useful.
On the consumer side, how can consumers be better empowered to make informed choices, especially in regions where there might be different levels of environmental consciousness or environmental drive?
It's one of the unfortunate realities of this fun little timeline that we're in is that at this stage of the game, it takes research and it takes probably spending a little bit more when you get to the till. And nobody wants to hear that, but it is the truth. Mm-hmm. If you want to overcome or you want to identify greenwashing and make sure you don't fall victim to it, it does take understanding a little bit of what's going on, you know, looking at the back of a label on a box and then researching, pulling out your phone and researching what the company actually says or what they actually do. So it doesn't sound very sexy and fun to have to do, but if you want to overcome greenwashing and not fall victim to it, it's the unfortunate reality. But if I had a crystal ball, and I always say this, that in 10 or 15 years time, we're not going to have to do that anymore. So it's just this little blip of time that we're in now. We look at it sort of like organic foods is a good example. So maybe 10 years ago, nobody could afford organic foods. And I get today that cost of living, nobody can afford organic foods either. So, but the price has certainly gone down because we've been able to scale the production of these sorts of things. And the same thing will happen when it comes to making sure businesses are doing the right thing by consumers. Those today that are the dinosaurs that are not doing the right thing, that refuse to play ball, like the ones that are probably in Canberra right now pushing back legislation, are not going to be around much longer. Capitalism will take care of them, and consumers certainly will realize they don't want to purchase from them, because even though stats are kind of all over the place when it comes to these issues, by and large, consumers, they do want to purchase from companies that stand for something. They don't want to be associated or put things on their body or in their body that are going to be bad or have a bad reputation. So that's really starting to ramp up. And like you mentioned in your question, this is different in every market around the world. It's different within markets around the world as to how much consumers are willing to purchase sustainable, particularly with all the issues going on around the world now, whether it's geopolitical, economic. We don't know what's going to happen with those trends either. But I feel I've gone on a major tangent, which I hope is okay. I think overall consumers, they do have to do their research. They do have to understand what they're purchasing and why. Yeah. But I think also just that gut instinct sometimes is a really good indicator of if something is fishy. Like if you look on the back of a pack of coffee and the language seems really fluffy, and it's really hard to understand because of all the jargon, and it just sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So maybe choose another product. Sometimes the gut instinct is the best one.
Yeah. And you've kind of touched on this, but if you wanted to expand on this, like what kind of future trends or developments do you anticipate? Do you see the roles of businesses or government or society changing in the future to drive this change?
So based on my kind of experience in the space, I've seen companies that are mature, particularly those that have really intricate value chains. They were sort of the pioneers when it came to sustainability, not necessarily because they cared, although I hope they cared. It's because they had to stay solvent, right? At the end of the day, I don't mind talking about sustainability and business in the same sentence, as I'm sure you don't mind, because that really is so, so important. My big thing that raises eyebrows sometimes is if we look at sort of the different stakeholders when it comes to building a better future. You have consumers, all of us, you have business, and you have government. So the issues we face today are massive. And I do not believe that as consumers, as individual consumers, we necessarily have the power to address all of them. We can do some things, but we can't do everything because the problems are so large. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, you have governments who really have shown their hand. They're not interested in, mm-hmm. in sort of building a better future by and large, because most of them around the developed world are working on 2 or 4 year cycles. So they mm-hmm. can't think long term. Sustainability is centuries. So they're worried about just getting back into office. So they kind of don't care. That leaves the private sector to kind of save us. Now, the private sector got us into this mess. So, A, it should get us out of the mess. But if you look at these massive multinational companies, some of them have access to capital and resources and the need to differentiate these things that are larger than entire countries. I mean, some mm-hmm. of the stats are, what was one of the stats I saw? I think Netflix is bigger than Madagascar.
Oh, wow.
So, like, you look at these things and you go, okay, of course. So if you have this need to change because consumers are demanding it, and you have the access to capital to do so, tap into that. Because like mm-hmm. we mentioned a few minutes ago, this stuff isn't going away. So they're going to have to start to respond to what consumers are demanding. And just from pure business acumen, trying to stay solvent is going to require being more sustainable as well. It's as the investors listening to this already know, I mean, sustainability isn't just hugging the trees and saving the polar bears, right? Mm-hmm. It makes absolute business sense. And the case studies are all over the place of why companies that are more sustainable always outperform their peers.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for speaking with us. We've been speaking with John Pabon on The Green Away. John, where can people find your book?
So you can find the book on my website, so just johnpabon.com, and probably in any little bookstore where you might be. And follow me on TikTok. I don't do any dancing, but I like to share a lot of in-depth information sort of like this on a podcast. So really, really enjoy using that as a channel as well.
Amazing. Do you have any other books in the works?
Oh, gosh. Well, I have a second book already. This was done in 2020 called Sustainability for the Rest of Us. So that's the shameless plug for that one. You know, I've just launched it in North America, which means as an author, you always have to be writing, which is something they don't tell you when you get started. So I think if I have another book in me, it's going to be around doomism and mm-hmm. countering this idea that we're all screwed. Yeah, things are going to change. The Earth's not going to be what it used to be. But this notion that there is no hope, I think, is a false one. So I want to write a little more hopeful book for people. Yeah.
Fantastic idea. Thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back.
The Green Away podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.